Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, hello, Nate Langson. If you're one of our patrons, this is your extended, that means longer, ad-free version, that means no ads, of this week's show. That means the same. But if you're not one of our patrons, but would like to get our ad-free extended versions or listen and interact with us live, head to patreon.com/UKTech. You get instant access to our entire back catalogue of extended shows. And hello to everybody who is joining us live in the chat room. I'm waving. You can't see me. This is audio. But safe to say my hand is moving like an upside down pendulum from the left to the right. Joining us this week is a man shot from the same gun barrel as myself, CNET.com's senior editor, Andy Hoyle. Hello, Andy.
Hi there. Thanks for such a lovely way of introducing me.
I couldn't think of anything else at the spur of the moment, so that's what we went with.
Joining us this week is CNET.com's senior editor Andy Hoyle. Would have been fine, but that's fine. We'll blow through that and we'll carry on. 2 weeks in a row, indeed. Yes, I'm very excited to be back for a second occasion.
And we're also very delighted to be joined by some new patrons this week, Russell Ryan, Jason Coombs, and Craig Wrangley. Welcome, Craig, Jason, and Russell. Thank you very much for being patrons, and hope you enjoy the show. In fact, speaking of the show, that's what we're going to get into now. Here it comes. Millions of Britons, Andy, are unwillingly, or rather they are unwilling, to be parted from their urban broadband and not too shabby mobile phone reception, and basically shunning rural living. This is according to a survey by YouSwitch. This is also according to the Register write-up this week. The Register says 9 million Britons won't move to the countryside through fear of being cut off by poor broadband, which is extrapolating, the survey rather, is extrapolating from a figure of a survey of 2,000 adults carried out in July. 17% of people who asked said they'd shun life outside of their nearest metropolis over fears of poor connectivity, the Register said. So basically, they won't move to the country because they're afraid that broadband will be too slow. The website wrote that just over half of the full survey amount, 58%, professed to be concerned about slow or unreliable broadband, which came second to crap public transport links. What else was in there? Oh, a lack of public services in the countryside was in fourth. So that was less important than the speed of broadband. And normally we would never, ever start off a show talking about a survey, because normally talking about a survey story means it's been a slow news week and we ran out of things to talk about. And while that is ostensibly true this week, this one is a little bit different, because when I bought my house here in Hertfordshire, if there hadn't been very good Virgin Media, genuinely, I don't know if we'd have bought it. So key is the speed of broadband. And I wondered if that's the same, A, Andy, for you, but also B, for people listening, or have they made decisions similar to that? And that's why I wanted to talk about this. But first, Andy, your views on this. Would you fall into this category of people that would not move somewhere simply because the broadband isn't good enough?
No, we both know that isn't the case for me. I yearn for a life living in the wilderness where I see no one, talk to no one, and I spend my time hiking and taking photos. Like, I would gladly one day leave behind entirely. That is not going to happen, because unfortunately I have to make my money on the internet. But I kind of, this kind of bugs me, because on the one hand it's sort of that, you know, the city people are like, oh no, I don't want to go out. I've got these posh boots. I don't want to get them muddy. And, you know, they're just too used to this city life and, oh, everything's got to be connected all the time. And I think there's such a value in disconnecting and going out and relaxing in the natural world a little bit. But obviously, like, that isn't necessarily realistic, and it doesn't need to happen, because there is signal in the countryside, particularly in Britain. Like, I think we've got pretty decent coverage, and yeah, it may not be super fast, but there is a lot of coverage for mobile signal. In fact, mobile signal, I think, is better than a lot of fixed line broadband that you can get. I know that was the case for our mum's home internet connection.
Yes, until we installed a microwave link on the side of her house.
Yes, until that happened. But I think I'm seeing this as a kind of what if you were setting up a business? Like, if I wanted to leave London, live outside of a city in the countryside, which I do very, very dearly, incidentally, I would need to have a decent internet connection in order to run a business or carry on being a journalist or whatever it is I would decide to do. And so I would have to have a decent connection. And it is the case that there are plenty of rural places that you can't get good enough speeds to really operate from. So as I say, I'm really seeing this from two angles. A, the having a weekend away in the countryside, or leaving the city altogether and living in the countryside. And one of them I can totally agree with the points, and the other one is ridiculous.
KV in the chat room right now points out something quite interesting, that the same could be said about former quote-unquote luxuries like electricity and running water back in the day, that maybe you wouldn't move somewhere if you didn't have running water, or if maybe you had to suffer the indignity of an outdoor toilet, which I've actually used, and everything that is horribly said about them, I can confirm to be accurate. It's terrible. And I think similar is probably true of having no internet if you need it. However, I'm with you, Andy, on this. Because I love the thought of not actually having speedy... we're talking about mobile phone signal here. This is specifically about NotSpots, but we've extended this out to be about internet in general. And I just wonder whether people are going to get so sick and tired and jaded of technology and of the amount of addiction that it can cause, and we've talked about that in the show before now, that actually moving somewhere where, when they're home, they're offline, is actually going to become quite attractive. And so these sorts of not spots, these places where you can go and get away from technology, comes sort of like a therapeutic little haven.
Yeah, it is for me. In terms of holidays, I like to know that if I'm going that I would be going somewhere that maybe I'm not going to get great signal. Like, that is good for me. If I'm traveling for work, obviously one of the important things is that my hotel will have good internet to allow me to do the job that I'm there to do. But for my own holidays, I love the highlands of Scotland. I love the mountains. I love forests. I love quite difficult to get to places. And I enjoy the fact that there isn't a constant internet signal there. Maybe it's a bit of phone signal in case of emergency, but you're offline. There's no Twitter. There's no Facebook and stuff. I find extremely refreshing.
Let us know any thoughts that you have. I'm particularly interested if anyone hasn't moved somewhere specifically because of internet or phone signal. Do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk if you are one of those people. Be very interested to hear that.
Yes. On that, sorry to interrupt your flow. I know how much you do not like that. But in April and June, I did a road trip. I think I may have talked about this on the podcast before, but I did a road trip around Slovenia, Croatia, Austria, Italy, and various places in a VW camper. And again, part of that was that we wanted to get away from the towns and away from the cities and really journey around the more rural areas where, frankly, most of the beauty is in those spots. And I had full very, very fast 4G almost the entire time, including when I was right up in the middle of the Dolomite Mountains in Italy, to the extent that when we wanted to watch an episode of Gilmore Girls on Netflix, it streamed absolutely perfectly. I didn't actually do a speed test, but I would hazard a guess that it was at minimum of 20 down, which in the middle of that area is, I thought, extremely impressive. Like, you can still go to these places and the connection will still be there.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK focused technology podcast. If you have an opinion, simply find the nearest pigeon and sellotape your thoughts to it before encouraging it to fly to our studio. Alternatively, send us an email using hello@techpodcast.uk. Please note, pigeons will not be returned.
Britain's biggest employer organisation and main trade union body, they've sounded the alarm, Andy, over the prospect of British companies implanting staff, their own staff, I presume, with microchips to improve security. This is according to a Guardian write-up this week. A spokesperson for the CBI, quoted by the paper and which represents about just under 200,000 UK businesses and voiced these concerns, said, "While technology is changing the way we work, this makes for distinctly uncomfortable reading. firms should be concentrating on rather more immediate priorities and focusing on engaging their employees. The TUC said that workers are already concerned that some employers are using tech to control and micromanage them, whittling away their staff's right to privacy. The Guardian said that these chips, and I've seen these, they're tiny. They look like a little grain of rice, and they're typically implanted into the flesh between the thumb and the forefinger. God, that's a bit of a tongue twister, isn't it? The thumb and forefinger, and they're very similar to the ones that you use for pets to have your postcode in there, or the code that connects to a postcode. And what they enable people to do is open front doors, access offices, or their car just by waving their hands. It can also be used to store medical data. And about 150 people or so in the UK have had this done, apparently. And it costs anywhere between about £70 and about £260. And some companies in the US have had it done, have allowed their employees to have it done as well. And they can get access to things like special vending machines just by waving their hand over it. I'm very excited by the prospect of this, but not from a company level, from a personal level, as contactless technologies become more and more pervasive. For example, I love the idea of being able to wave my hand over the contactless terminal on the tube or on a train or on a bus and having it accept me as a passenger as if I was magic, basically. So you put it under your skin or under your finger and just sort of tap it with your hand and it opens. Or if I'm in Waitrose buying my lunch every day, and instead of having to hold up my iPhone or my Apple Watch, I just wave my hand over the cash register and it...
Because holding up your Apple Watch versus holding up your hand is a big difference. That's too much of an inconvenience for you, is it?
It's not convenience. It's already very convenient. It's more feeling like I'm a wizard that I'm after. That feeling right. That I'm in some way challenging Gandalf. Not challenging, channeling Gandalf. Or Harry Potter. Or, you know, anyone else who wears... wizard robes and is infused with magic. That's what I want to be, and that's why I'm attracted to it. Andy, you have some knowledge about this, I believe.
I do, yes. My colleague Katie Collins at CNET, who writes of a news desk, has had one of these implants in her hand. Admittedly, she had hers done as a little bit of a stunt at one of the tech shows a couple of years ago, where there was a security company who... offered to implant one of these into her, and she had it in the same place, as you say, between the thumb and forefinger. And so far, she hasn't done anything with it because this is brand new tech, and it's only being done by such a small group of effectively like biohackers that there's nothing that she can do. She's not in a position to program it herself and to let it do things, so she can't, for example, input our office security cards into it in order to swipe access that way. She can't use it as an Oyster card. I think the nearest that she may be able to do is have it as just basically being a passive NFC chip. So theoretically, I think she could program it if she had the right reader and tools to, I don't know, for example, if she had a NFC phone, she could tap it against a hand and turn the phone onto silent.
So what was the impetus for this to be done in the first place, other than a company said, do you want to have it done? Like, what was the sell there? And I appreciate I should have really just asked her to come on the show and talk about it, but still.
I believe it was pretty much that. She wanted an interesting story from the tech show, which wasn't just about new laptops.
Oh, right.
I think that was pretty much the case at the time. But obviously they did talk about you know, here are the potential things that you can do, which in theory sound interesting from a personal perspective. But obviously this topic that we're on about at the moment is more from like a business perspective of like businesses encouraging, hopefully encouraging rather than demanding that employees do this, because there's a lot of discussion over how different ways that businesses are tracking their staff and the potential positives, but the arguably more significant potential negatives of this. And certainly there's already been concerns that the TUC has said about basically the staff no longer having any privacy if they can be tracked theoretically all the time, whether they're in work or out of work, I think is concerning.
John in the chat room, once again proving to be the font of all backstage knowledge when it's required, actually flagged that someone had tried already to take the chip out of their travel card and put it under their skin and got fined for it. This was actually by a gentleman in Sydney. This is a story on Sky News that I'm reading. It was from March of this year. And he says, and it turns out that he was fined not because he'd done it, but because when asked to show his travel card to an on-train attendant, presumably, he was unable to because it was actually, he'd taken the chip out and had an expert plant it under his skin so he could do exactly what I wanted to do, which is wave his hand over the reader like a wizard.
Yeah, the Oyster card in London has the same, they have the same rules. They officially, you rent the Oyster cards from TFL, and there are rules. You cannot do anything to the card. You cannot upgrade it. You cannot take it apart. You cannot take the chip out. The card is the card, and the card remains their property, and using their service means using the card in that form. Whether they would enforce it in this way, I don't know. They probably would do, just to make an example of somebody if someone were to try this, but yeah, just in case anyone's thinking about doing the same in London.
Well, are you a wizard? Are you able to wave a body part over a piece of transport infrastructure to gain access to somewhere via a different way than everybody else? Do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. Very interested in hearing what body part you use and where you use it.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
EE, the largest mobile carrier in the UK, of course, is planning to launch its 5G network in 16 cities next year. This is according to Engadget this week. The initial launch is going to include London, Cardiff, Edinburgh, Belfast, Birmingham and Manchester. No surprises there. I looked it up and all of those got 4G in the first year of that technology's rollout from EE as well. Other networks are close too. Vodafone said it would have 1,000 5G-enabled network sites in Britain by 2020. It started tests this year and said in September that Cornwall and the Lake District are going to receive 5G next year. Three also recently announced it's planning to spend about $2.5 billion on expanding its 5G infrastructure. And O2 said as well that it's won a very large amount of spectrum to deploy 5G when the time is right. And Engadget also helpfully pointed out that our government here has set a goal of getting 5G coverage to the majority of the country by 2025. That all sounds very interesting. I compared it to the rest of the world, and South Korea came up in the most interesting list of countries that are way ahead of us. Its IT ministry and local telecoms operators have agreed to launch 5G services at the same time to avoid unnecessary competition that would exacerbate marketing costs. That was according to ZDNet. And South Korea is actually planning on commercializing 5G next year in March. Trials are going to begin next month. So South Korea, way ahead of us in terms of tech again, but also way ahead of us in terms of actually teaming up and cutting down the costs of getting this rolled out widely. That's about all I actually have to say on this topic. It's fairly matter-of-fact news, but I still think that it's going to be quite a long time before we're seeing any massive benefit to 5G. It's also going to be incredibly expensive, I would imagine. I looked at the prices that EE was charging when it rolled out. Did you know that £36 a month when 4G first rolled out on EE, £36 got you 500 megabytes of data?
Yeah, when it first launched, it was bonkers expensive, and I held off for quite a long time. In fact, I think my first 4G contract was on 3, because it launched, I believe, with at the same price, and so its prices were extremely competitive. Then I left 3 because the coverage was terrible and moved to Vodafone. But I think what's particularly interesting is that we still don't really know exactly how 5G is going to benefit these rural areas that, again, we talked about earlier, because there's still plenty of discussion about the how that they use the spectrum differently, how 5G can penetrate further and still get a strong signal, and how 5G is going to be benefiting more sort of connected devices in the, quote, Internet of Things, and allow for just more things to be connected without annihilating bandwidth, basically. So I think there's a lot of testing to be done and a lot more clarification on how it's really going to benefit us, which I'm looking forward to finding out. But I think we're only going to find out how much of a benefit it's going to be once they start actually deploying it.
One of the main reasons that I like to talk about 5G on this show, even though the technology isn't really here yet, is kind of as a warning sign for everybody to not fall for the marketing that will initially come out of the gate for these systems, for these technologies. Because unlike 4G, that will immediately have a massive benefit for the people who are able to take advantage of it. 5G is a very, very different beast, and it's not to 4G what 4G was to 3G. And there's going to be a lot of companies coming out with marketing about moving to 5G devices and getting 5G. The real benefits are not going to come from speed alone. So we need to be quite careful on this. But trust me when I say we're going to be keeping our finger on this pulse, as I'm sure will Andy. Andy, will your finger be on the aforementioned pulse?
My finger will be somewhere near the pulse, searching desperately for the strongest pulse point. Hopefully I'll be the one to find it. But crucially, I think, just before we finish on this topic, it's interesting that they're talking about launching it next year. But of course, it's early next year when we have Mobile World Congress, the big tech show where a lot of the very high-end phones are launched, usually including Samsung's Galaxy line. So that's when we're expecting to see the new Galaxy S10. And I think this year is probably when we're going to see a lot more talk about 5G in devices, because they know that the services are coming and they're going to have devices out there to take advantage of it. So I think there'll be a lot of news coming out about 5G in February when that show kicks off.
You and I will probably no doubt be there, so I imagine you can look for a big 5G special in the new year at some point. But in the meantime, if you have any thoughts on 5G and the announcement, do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. Let's dive headfirst into the mailbag. Andy, I'm going to have to strip off to some Speedos here and dive into the feedback pool. Have a little swim around and see what we can find. Are you ready?
Oh, yes.
Here we go. Splish, splash. Okay, I found this one from Kate, who writes in and says, "Hello, following recent discussions, I thought you might like to hear my experiences with social media addiction and what I'm doing to try and improve my relationship with social media and my phone in general. Although I don't know exact numbers, I don't use an iPhone, I was spending significant periods of my day on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. One main issue was my second screening and feeling unable to sit and watch TV or a film without scrolling through Instagram at the same time. This was made worse when I was trying to study for exams and write assignments, when I found I couldn't spend 5 minutes concentrating on my work without wanting to quickly check Facebook. And of course, quickly checking Facebook always leads to quickly checking Twitter and quickly checking Instagram, leading to around 5 minutes working to 55 minutes of social media. Another issue was the content itself. The beautiful photographs on Instagram made me jealous and depressed. Twitter made me feel angry and depressed. Facebook just made me depressed. I tried to unfollow certain accounts and keep it all lighthearted and fun, but the politics, moaning, and general crappiness still made its way through to me. Last week, my husband and I agreed to give up alcohol together until Christmas Day, and downloading a sobriety app to help us do this, called I Am Sober, I realized it had to be all or nothing. I deleted all three apps and declared myself sober from social media. At the time of writing, I've not checked Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram for 5 days, 11 hours, and 42 minutes. I'm aiming for a week to begin with, then who knows? I've been working on an assignment for college and have found that I am so much more focused and productive, possibly more than I have been at any point in my life since I've had a computer readily available to me. I do find myself picking up my phone and staring pointlessly at it before putting it back down, but it's becoming less and less frequent. A few people have told me they miss my Instagram updates, and I do continue to want to continue posting to Instagram as I enjoy documenting things, but I'm still trying to work out how to do this without compromising my productivity and mental health. If anyone has any tips or good apps that limit usage, then I'm keen to hear them. The absence of Twitter and Facebook, however, has only been a good thing, and I can't see myself wanting to go back to those with any sort of regularity. I'd be interested to hear if anyone has given up social media completely cold turkey after being completely addicted to it. Maybe we could create a support group. I imagine it's quite a widespread addiction, but one that doesn't get a lot of press or attention from health professionals. For anyone who's interested, I also recommend a book called Irresistible by Adam Alter about this very problem. Thanks for reading my long email. All the best, Kate. And just before I jump into that, I hope everyone realizes that I read that in one take without bursting out laughing at the fact that in the Discord on my left screen, people are posting photographs of their new shoehorns. So that took a great deal of self-control not to laugh in the middle. This is completely true. I mean, Andy, you've been trying to massively limit your use of social media as well, haven't you?
Yep.
In a similar way. Have you managed to go cold turkey?
No, and I don't think I need to. I think what it's been about is recognizing what the problems were. And for me and for various people I know, the problem was certainly Twitter and just that constant need to refresh and go back. What's been missed, that almost drug-like feeling of you've got to quickly go back and get that next bit from it. And it was never good because there's nothing good on Twitter anyway.
Plus, there's no bottom. The endless scrolly that you can never feel like you've actually caught up.
You've never
everything.
Caught up. No, you haven't. No, absolutely. So for me, the biggest thing I did was to, I still use Twitter, and I think I maybe talked about this before. I still use it because I have to for my job, but I no longer read Twitter. I will post to Twitter, and I do that just by having in Safari, I have one of my bookmarks, just takes me automatically to my mentions page, so I can post things and I can mention and I can look at anyone who's talking to me, so I can make sure I'm replying and not being rude, or any replies to my tweets. And I have a set list of people whose Twitter pages I will navigate directly to. If I know that they've posted maybe a story that I want to help promote, I will go to that and do that. Instagram for me has never been a problem. That's actually a really nice space for me because I use it solely professionally for photography. So I will follow automotive photographers and photography professionals, and that's pretty much it. So for me, there is no there's no discussion, there's no nastiness, there's no none of the unpleasantness that you get is actually quite a good learning resource and creative space. So I don't feel that's a problem. But even then, I follow so few accounts that there is not the constant update. There's not that constant flow you need to feel you have to keep up with. For me, maybe it's a twice a day thing, and there's only maybe five or six posts each time for me to kind of look back through and check out. Facebook is, as it always has been, I rarely use it these days. Every so often I might check, and I usually regret that. I have the account if people do want to get in touch. So I use Facebook Messenger more than I do Facebook itself, but Facebook I rarely use, and as a result I do miss things like event invites, and people will say, oh, I didn't know if you're coming to my birthday, for example. But most people do now know that I rarely use it, and I don't miss it at all. It has been a gradual process of getting used to not being on there and getting myself off it, but I feel infinitely better for not being on there. It feels a lot more freeing, and it means that when you're relaxing at home on an evening, you're not second screening, you're not watching a film, but also spending half of it looking down at your phone. You're actually looking at the things you're doing, and I find that less of my free time is spent just endlessly opening my phone and looking at something and actually thinking, oh, I can go and do a thing now, whether that's looking at some of my photographs to do some edits on, or going for a walk, or reading a book. I've only had positives as a result of this. There has been no downsides.
Well, we're big proponents on the show, as regular listeners will know, of switching off, of disabling notifications, of moderation and things like that. And it's easier said than done. You know, my personal tactic to this is turning off all notifications for social media and moving them off my home screen of my phone, because I tend to find that whatever's on my home screen is what my brain wants to use, whereas swiping across means that I'm more aware that I'm probably wasting time and therefore less compelled to actually use the app itself. But everyone has their own ways of messaging it, of managing it. And some people, like Kate, who wrote in, have to just go cold turkey, uninstall the whole thing and just make a clean break. So I open this up to the floor of listeners. How do you manage this? What advice do you have? Is there a way of still being able to enjoy Twitter, Facebook, Instagram as examples, but in a way that maybe is limited by design? You know, maybe something that gets rid of the endless scroll, or something that just highlights the top 10 things a week or a day or something like that. Let us know any good suggestions, and we'll come back to this next week and read out some of the best suggestions and answers. All welcome. hello@techpodcast.uk. We, of course, do our very best every week to keep you up to date with the most relevant news to British listeners, but we're not ignorant to the rest of the world. Unfortunately, our friend over the pond, Tom Merritt, always keeps us informed about what's been going on in the wider world of tech over the previous few days. Tom, what's been going on this week?
Hey, thanks. This week on Daily Tech News Show, we discussed how President Macron's cybersecurity call might pave the way for more EU leadership on the internet, broke down the Amazon decision to pick three cities instead of one in the US for their new regional offices, broke down the breakdown of trust in Facebook, and got the scoop from Robert Herron on which TVs you might want to ask Father Christmas for. All that and a lot more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you to our patrons supporting us every week. Obviously, if you're not yet a patron, we'd like to get in on our ad-free extended versions, which this week we had a very lengthy and fascinating discussion about the benefits of foldable technologies. Should our phones be bending? Should our tablets be folding in half? What else should be folding, and why should it fold? What other form factors might be useful? That's all in the Patreon version this week, which you can get at patreon.com/UK. Tech. And thank you to everyone who is listening on our free feed and telling their friends and leaving us amazing reviews. As we like to point out each week, this is just as helpful as supporting us financially, because that helps the show spread and helps us keep in the top charts and things like that. So in whatever way you're supporting us, thank you. It means the world. And our final thank you, of course, to Andy Hoyle from CNET for joining us for a second week in a row. Andy, has anything else been going on in your world since 7 days ago that people should know about?
Absolutely, yes. I've just found out that my cat has been bought an elf costume, and he looks great in it. So that really is the big thing going on. And tomorrow I'm going to go and play with some owls.
And is that for work?
No, that's just for fun. I've taken the day off work to go and play with some owls.
Okay. I mean, normally people promote something they're doing professionally on the end of a show that's heard by, you know, thousands of people. But by all means, tell us where we can find photos of the cat dressed as an elf or whatever you do with an owl tomorrow.
You probably won't be able to find those, but if you want to find any of the work I do professionally as a photographer, then you can find me on @batteryhq on Instagram and Twitter. Should you want to go into the social media world. I don't think there's a lot else I have coming up that would be any point in promoting now, but there'll be plenty of things coming up that I will promote in the coming weeks should I come back on the show. So keep your eyes peeled.
I don't know if I've told you, but I know a cracking owl sanctuary.
Good. That's probably the one I'm going to.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in a week.
You've been listening to Text Message with your host, Nate Langson. If you get value from the show, please consider joining our many supporters on Patreon. You can get access to a version of the show every week with no ads, and as much as 40% more discussion every time. There's no obligation, so why not try a month by going to patreon.com/UK Tech or looking for the link in this episode's description.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.